Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I've always been a development coach, really. I think try and make the players better, try and make them grow, try and understand, and hopefully the results follow. If they don't, you lose your job, that's fine. I understand football. But I think, you know, somewhere down the line, I hope the players, like a lot of players I'll have worked with over the years, will think that the period they spent working under us, that they understood the game better and they became a better footballer. But I hope, you know, the alignment with winning and developing can be found, of course. But it's going to be a slightly longer journey than people might hope at this football club because of the inexperience, I think, of some of the footballers that we've got.
Welcome along to the Wise Men's Here podcast. Lots to get through this evening. I hope the alignment between winning and developing can be found. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about Tony Mowbray in general. And we're going to, unfortunately, have to reflect on the FA Cup draw because, well, yeah. Okay, right. Joining myself, as always, Stephen goes, as always, is Gareth Barger.
Good night.
Evening. Evening, you okay?
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch the draw live, or did you miss it? Like
no,
me,
I didn't. No, well, I didn't even know I was watching. I think I was watching the cricket. I forgot about it, and then someone just went FA Cup draw, and I thought they were just shouting FA Cup draw.
And then Where did somebody shout?
Well, it was actually Frankie in the group.
Oh, in the group chat. All right, okay.
Capital letters FA Cup draw.
And you didn't actually hear somebody shout next door or something.
And then people were going, oh, God, oh, God. So I was like, it's going to be that, isn't it? And then I went on not Twitter or whatever it's called, and it said the thing that I thought it was going to say.
And well, I was out building a snowman.
That's probably, you probably should have stayed there till January the 8th.
I didn't give it a thought at all. And literally, so Claire came, she'd been working, and she just walked up the drive, and I was like, what do you think, me snowman, and all that. I am taking credit for it because the kids gave up halfway through, but I was unprepared to just leave it half done.
Get judged by people on your street.
Well, you know, the guy across the street started building one when he's seen us do one, which I'm not surprised at, so it had to be bigger than that. She kind of just said to me, well, how come you haven't texted me about that? And I was like, what do you mean about that? And she said, the cup draw. Have you not seen the cup draw? And I was like, no, what? And then, as soon as you said that, I thought, this, please don't tell me that you're going to say what I think you're going to say here. So, yeah.
I was still half asleep because we didn't get in from, because Millwall trains were so mental. We didn't get in from Millwall until like 1:30 in the morning. So I was still like dozing. And my phone just, I thought someone was ringing me. Like, you know, when you get so many messages in a row that your phone starts like vibrating as though someone's ringing me. And I was like, oh my God. But nobody was saying it. Nobody was saying we've actually got the mags. It was just loads of, oh my God, this is insane. What has happened? And then I went on Twitter X, and it was just loads of people saying exactly the same thing. Nobody was actually confirming it was the mags. So there was a good 5 minutes where me and Rory were just sat there going, I think we've got the mags. I think that's what happened, but we're unable to confirm it. And it felt like the club tweet felt forever to come out, took forever to come out about it. But again, like that was probably only about 2 minutes after the draw happened, but everything just went into like slow motion.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we'll discuss it close at the time, but we'll talk about this more, I think, in the second part, because I do want to just get people's initial reactions on on this, and it's just unbelievable, really. Right, so Tony Mowbray, I mean, that's not the only quote. That's the only quote we could really publish because it's on YouTube. So so you're speaking to the club's official channel there. So, you know, that's out in the public domain. We're free to use that. There were more comments he made specifically to the Sunderland journalists, weren't there, in the press room, where he got into a little bit more detail than that.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying, like, the Echo, I think it was Phil Smith who wrote the article, and he said that they asked Mowbray if it was time, and I'm quoting the article here, but they asked him if it was time to revert to the tried and tested, and Mowbray's response was that, and this is what Phil Smith's written, that he didn't feel he was able to do that given the clear brief from the club hierarchy to integrate and give opportunities to summer acquisitions. That's what the Echo have said that he said, which, based on what we've just heard and based on kind of what we're seeing at the moment and all this, it's a bit damning, really. You're starting to feel like, I don't want to say a manager's way out, because I'm not Mowbray out. I'm not there yet, but it's just starting to feel a bit almost defeatist. And, well, not defeatist, but do you know what I mean?
I think he's there himself, to be honest, Eleanor. Because, I mean, you know, he's expressed concern previously. We've spoken so many times. And again, before people start saying we're saying things that we're not, nobody here, or certainly that I know of, that's involved with Wiseman, say, has suggested we should give a manager full control of transfers and all that stuff. It's just not a thing anymore. It's 2023. That's not how it works. But the lack of flexibility and the lack of just common sense of a manager saying to you, that's fine for your transfer policy. Actually, I need an experienced defensive midfielder to get these lads through a game. Then they can go and work on that brief and bring in who they want. But it can't just be the same over and over again, bringing in. It's just, it's starting to, you know, it's starting to come to fruition now. Our fears are starting to be realised now. And he's starting to come out and address this publicly now. He's not even trying to hide behind it anymore. He's almost getting his excuses in now. Well, not excuses, because that's not fair, because I agree with him. But he's getting his side of the story across now, isn't he? That's what it feels like. He feels like he needs to do.
He's always kind of
to an extent, but he's implied at Gareth more than this is quite on the nose. This now.
Well, let's be honest. They've been trying to kind of dislodge. Like, the club have probably bottled getting rid of him in the summer because we got the playoffs. So it's like, how could we make that change now because of this? And you know, there was rumours in the summer about the fella from, where is he? Is he Lille now or Nice? I can't remember, one of the two.
Yeah, he's doing really well, isn't he?
Yeah,
he is. Is it Nice, I think?
It might be. And he was, you know, he was the one, the name in the frame, wasn't he? Kind of, and there was a lot of noise about it. But, you know, I like the manager. I think he's done a great job with the situation he's been given. And I agree with the comment, you know, if people think it's just going to... Nothing that we are doing suggests that we want to get promoted soon. Now, people can dispute that. People can have delusions of grandeur about the players that we've got, because in my opinion, that's what it is. I mean, there's some really excellent, talented footballers there, but to allow them to best perform, they need some help. And we've always sort of talked about this. And when the going gets tough, we don't seem to, we lack that. And it's harsh on the players who we've got, asking them to, you know, learn on the job, really. Some of them will never be up to the job. I just think it's just an interesting when you think about the kind of players who often return the best on investment are usually attacking midfielders, wide players. Squad's absolutely chock full of attacking midfielders and wide players. Yeah,
There's a lack of flexibility around that, though, isn't it? Like, I think that's fine, and like we keep saying, generally it's a sensible thing to do to try and be more sustainable and bring them in. And yeah, but it can't just be that. Like, who would look at a team that finished sixth and say, actually, like if we went and brought in an experienced, you know, but better Corey Evans kind of player, an experienced centre half to go alongside that young defence. Arguably, even a journeyman striker, which you know that if you bring in somebody, you can still get young, good strikers. But you know what I mean? Like a couple of players just to.
I think as like I was listening to Radio 5 this morning, and Peter Schmeichel was on there, and he was talking about the Denmark national team, and I know very very different kind of ball game, literally international football. But he was talking about how he felt like they lost their way for a bit, and then it kind of came back to, right, we need to bring some of these kind of older players in, these more experienced players in, to guide these younger ones. And as he was talking, I was listening, I was like, this feels like where Sunderland's headed and where Sunderland needs to be going. We do need to have that experience on the pitch along with these young lads, because as we've seen, sometimes bringing in these young lads can I'm not getting emotional, I did just have something in my throat there, but bringing these young lads in can really pay off. Key example, Ahmad last season, like that obviously did really pay off. But he's got alongside him Patrick Roberts, in terms of the Sunderland team, a very experienced player. He had kind of, for a lot of it, there were more experienced players on the pitch alongside him, and in situations where players might feel a bit lost or might not know how to deal with it. And the one that I'd go to would be Swansea. I think a key example of where we needed more experience on the pitch was there. They went down to 10 men. The young lads didn't really feel like they knew as well how to deal with that kind of situation. I think that it's starting to show that if you just pack your team full of bairns, really, it's not going to do it. You need to have that kind of symbiosis between those older players who aren't going to lose their heads, who are going to really guide you through it, and those younger players who can bring that spark, who can bring those moments of brilliance and perform for us. And I think that, especially with Mowbray's been saying, I think he's getting a bit tired of not having that kind of equal balance in his squad. And I don't think it's even just in his starting 11. I think it is in the squad in general that there isn't that balance. Like,
there's no middle. Is like, when we've discussed this before, you've got players who are ready and players who aren't, and there's nothing in between. Maybe Bradley Dack's the in between. I don't know, but there's just nothing there. Like, there's nothing in between, so it's quite stark. I mean, Barr would probably come into the in between category.
Yeah.
Which is a very stark contrast. It's like, well, so you lose one of the centre backs, so you got to play Sealed and or Triantis, and they're nowhere near ready. We had to play Sealed and Triantis together because of the injury in the warm up, the circuit and stuff like that. It's just like the drop off, excuse me, from like the first team ready player to somebody who needs to feel the way in is just so stark. And it's just a big ask, because, you know, for them to be, if they're going to be good enough, they need to sort of feel the way in gradually. And a lot of the time,
it's not
real,
possible for them to get in
it's
gradually.
Just, no, it's not. It's
like,
just,
we need them immediately for a lot of them.
Yeah. But
this is what he's applying. This is what he's implying as well. And he's, and again, in more of the things he was saying after the match, by saying it gets to a point where, like, I can't just give them minutes for giving minutes' sake. We're not going to get back in this game. We're not going to win this game unless I bring on people like Pritchard, who changed the game entirely when he come on.
Yeah. Massively.
I don't know. It's just a very... It's kind of worrying as well that, you know, so he can't pick the team he wants to pick. I mean, basically, is what we're saying either.
which he's never implied before. That's what I'm saying. This is a new one. This is quite a heavy one. I feel like he's going to get pulled about this, isn't he?
Yeah, because I think there was.
Sorry, go on, Eleanor.
No, I was just going to say, I think there was, because we're talking about how he has implied it in the past. I think that there's been kind of, there was that talking, wasn't there, near the beginning of the season, where he kind of, you could tell that there was stuff he wasn't saying, that he was kind of like not wanting to fully kind of go in on. And over time, it just seems that he's getting more and more sick of feeling like he's just a bit of a kind of puppet manager. He's just there to be the front man, and actually it's starting to feel like a lot more's being decided behind the scenes that he's just not getting any control over. And he will have been told this when he came. There will have been kind of that, you're a head coach, this is how it works, because they very much had that system in place at that point. And obviously this is one of the reasons that Alex Neil gave for leaving. He didn't like that it was, that there was that stuff going on behind the scenes that he didn't feel he had control of. So I don't think that Mowbray was kind of completely oblivious to this. But I think that as time's gone on, especially with wanting to sell players, players not getting picked, him being, as he's basically said, him being told that he can't pick certain players, I think it's just getting more and more overbearing and them being in control. And I think he's just starting to be like, this isn't, it's sad, but it's almost like, this isn't the job for me anymore. This isn't the job I want anymore. Like that's what it sounds like, really.
It's interfering with team selection is not on, by the way. Categorically, it's not on.
No.
That's not your job. That's not your job.
If you've got no say, in the players you sign, and then you're basically saying, I've been told I've got to play these players. Like, I mean, that's not great, is it? You look at the Dak signing, and I bet you there's people out there probably, if they're not a fan of Mowbray, probably go, well, that was his signing, look at him. I wouldn't be surprised if the reason we probably signed Dak is because we were trying to get rid of Pritchard. So he's like for like replacement, really, isn't he, on paper? We didn't get rid of Pritchard. So they're there. Both there. Really, Dax, to me, is being rendered pointless by the fact that Pritchard's remained, and Pritchard's better than him anyway. So, it's just, we've played some brilliant football, like, under Mowbray, and he's done a brilliant job. And I just feel like the players and the manager have been, and we've kind of said this before, let down a bit by the recruitment. And I've said this before, it doesn't get me going to sit in the stands and, think, oh God, I can't wait to sell him for £20 million. What a great success story that'll be, because I don't see any of that money. So I paid the money I pay out. Goes to watch the football and hopefully have a team on the pitch who have, I'm not saying I expect something to get promoted, but I'd rather we looked at it from, this is our aim, is to try and get promoted. Not, it shouldn't be, oh blimey, we've ended up in the playoffs by accident, which is kind of what happened last year. And that was a massive overachievement. The squad's weaker this year, in my opinion. Some people dispute that. I can't logically see how there's an argument to see that it isn't. We've lost one of the best strikers in the league, and people say, oh, he's injured. Yeah, okay, he's injured. We've lost Danny Bart, who was our player of the season.
Ellis Sims. And Ahmad was the gold dust, wasn't it?
Ahmad. There's no way anyone can tell me that. You might have the opinion that we are in a stronger position, but I don't know how anyone can look. Defensively, we're a lot worse. We're a lot shakier. We seem to get pulled apart quite easily when people move. Players give the ball away, driving out into spaces, where you wouldn't normally find them, give the ball away, leave big gaping space for somebody to get into, like we saw, you know, when Bradshaw should have scored second at the weekend. Long, was that just after we scored a penalty? I think they should have scored. They should have scored again.
It wasn't long after.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want to be like overtly pessimistic because I think we've been really good and we could get into that top six.
And young people are going to show spikes in form and absolutely. And then Mike Gordon like a little run now where it just clicks for them again. I mean, bloody hope so with one of the games that's coming up. But like, and yeah, I get that, but it's just frustrating when you can see how close and you just feel like it needs finely tuned and there's just no attempt whatsoever to do it. A couple of things, I mean, quickly, this isn't a blind defensive Mowbray Ivy does get things wrong, just acknowledging that I will have nightmares at Sale for right back for the rest of my life. And that was a pure Mowbray decision. I just want to ask, just finally before we move on, I mean, this idea that Sunderland, it doesn't matter if we got another centre forward because we aren't creating chances for centre forwards like Sunderland now, you know. Sunderland didn't play better last season because suddenly a group of professional footballers can only function without a striker. I'm just not having it. I think Ahmad made that extra difference last season, and that was the difference between where we are now, and it's kind of masked the centre-forward issue. And on the not creating chances thing, I mean, their striker, who scored the first goal, I can't remember his name, Nesbitt?
Yeah.
Yeah, 09 was poor. He's been like a moth to a light bulb, hasn't he? But Nisbet's anticipated where that ball's going to fall, and he scored. And then Bradshaw, who started on the bench for them, who would walk into our team, right place, right time for that disallowed goal. Me and Matt spoke about this last week. It's centre forwards anticipate where the ball's going to go every single match. Roberts and Clark pull the ball across the box. Now, statistically, that's not classed as a chance. So people who just hide behind stats as well, that's not classed as a chance. It's a chance if a forward knows where that ball's going to go. I mean, look at the one Ballard missed.
Yeah.
Just because he got himself into a good position. That's rolled back. I'm just so sick of hearing people say it. And
we create Hatfields of chances. Mm. We've had God knows how many, it's probably 70 shots in away games in recent times, and probably scored like twice, three times, and penalties. We did say last year any sort of forward, and then now we're saying not actually none of
the better one than the ones
four,
we've got.
The better one than the four we have. So
but
maybe
I think Burstow made a bit of an impression initially, though, and like I know me, Matt looked like an idiot for championing him and Barr to start the weekend, and both had shockers. But initially, when he came in the team, he did make a difference because he was moving the defenders around and stuff, and you could see it. Now there is an argument to say his confidence could be shot, which I'm not having with other players, by the way. You know, not to go over old ground. Burstow, I could see it because he was just suddenly dropped, and it's like, right, we're going to try all of these people before you. And again, I get it, because what's the point in developing somebody else's player? We've said this before as well. There is zero point, unless you think, yes, he looks close, actually. Giving him game time and game time and game time to see we might get a decent player by then, the season's not going to benefit us in any shape or form. So it's just, again, another thing that I'd...
I think
you said it. You said on it on the pod, didn't you, Stephen? You said about how Roberts, it was no secret that it was Roberts' like run of form, Roberts looking better, happened when Burstow was on the pitch. Like it, and you're talking about stats there, and I think Roberts is one of the biggest kind of victims of the kind of stats being thrown at him, because yes, his stats don't look great for this season, but that's because, and watching him at Millwall on Saturday was a bit heartbreaking, because the number of times he put that ball dead on the penalty spot and there was just nothing there. There was just nobody there to kind of even try and get like a shot on target. And you're right, none of those will go down as him having any sort of assist or him having any sort of impact on play, I guess. But it was it is kind of at the point where we can't keep saying that we can play without a striker, because even last season we went into the playoffs, it was purely on goal difference in the end, wasn't it? Like, we went into the playoffs on goal difference, and you look at kind of those players that we lost, Ross Stewart, Ellisons, Ahmad, you look at them, between them, you've got at least, what is it, like 25 goals? It must, like, it can't be far off that, really. And you think, how can we can't sit here and say that we're all right playing without a striker, when goal difference made the difference for us last season, and those players contributed so many goals to our campaign. We need that striker. We need that person who's going to sit up there and take those chances and be able to get themselves in the right position. And it does come into it, have the experience to be able to put their body where they need to, have the experience to be able to read the match. And that's where, I mean, it's definitely where Hamir's missing on it. I think Mayenda looks like he's got a spark, but I think he's at least kind of a season away from being kind of really a contender. I think that it's just, I feel like I'm like rehashing stuff like that we've said so many times before, and I don't want this to become another kind of we need a striker pod, but it's just frustrating when, and it's frustrating when us as relative novices like sit here and say this is obviously what's missing. Have been saying it for what feels like almost 2 years now, and it's just not materializing, and it's not here. Like, I don't know what else there is to say on it anymore.
I mean, logically to me, the thing that I would be thinking about in January, which is a bit of balance within the system, I'd be thinking we loan Hamir out somewhere. Yeah. Russin would be the number one striker, based on the fact we've paid a fee. He looks, and some might disagree, but I think he's, if you think about all the strikers have played, at least he gets in areas to score. He's had quite a few opportunities, and he's looked the closest to being there. Mayenda would be a backup of the youth players. But Burstow, like you say, Stephen, I don't really see the benefit in
sending back and get somebody else on loan if that's
well. I'd be looking, if we're talking about doing something like that, I'd go replace him with an experienced head and have
not
three.
It's not loud.
Have the three. So you've got an experienced one, you've got one in the middle, and you've got one coming through. You've got, you know, so, and in training as well, like, you know, someone like Russell Mayenda, whoever. You know, being around a striker who's done it in the championship, you know, it's going to be beneficial to them on a daily basis as well.
We've said it over and over. It's
so
not just,
if you've got that, a group like that where you've got one in the middle, one cut up and coming, one who's done it. There's a nice mix there, where at the moment we haven't really got much of it. We haven't got a mix, and we've got a lot of people learning on the job, and nobody really to. I mean, obviously Proctor's on the coaching staff, and I'm sure he'll be, you know, be able to, you know, give some insight. But I think you've got, I think playing with somebody on the training pitch every day, learning from somebody, understanding how, you know, how to score goals in England, would be helpful. That's kind of, but will it happen? And I think that's kind of the point that Mowbray's made, you know, will it happen? No. I mean, the fact that the first change we make at the weekend, and I'll come back to your sealed point, which I totally agree with, by the way, but I'm just trying to think about the way maybe Mowbray's thinking about it. You know, the first change we make is we take the striker off and bring Pritchard on, so we don't even bring on Mayenda. We've gone to a false nine again and putting Pritchard up front when we're 1-0 down in the game. Sealed at right back is, to me, just says, I don't trust you to play centre-half. He has to play the player, but he's hiding him. Now, I know that functionally it wasn't good going forward, but maybe you think, well, he could be a more risk to us as a centre-half than he is from a progressive perspective as a right-back. So it's like it's safety. That might be the case. To me, that's what it looks like. He doesn't trust him to play in his natural position because he doesn't believe he's capable yet at this level to do that. And this is what he's kind of intimating in his comments. He's got a group of players who aren't quite ready to compete for 90 minutes in most games. I mean, they do compete in energy and they try. And we've always said that, you know, that you can't fault this team for the effort that they put in the games. And, you know, they kept going again at the weekend and got an equaliser through a penalty, which wasn't a penalty, but live, I can understand why he gave it because it looked absolutely nailed on. Only when you slow it down, you could see it was actually a pretty good tackle. But if you tackle from behind the box, leave yourself open there.
I'm not convinced it wasn't a penalty. I'm probably in a minority of one, but he's got a touch on the ball. He's took his standing leg away for me.
Maybe. It was quite a big touch on that. I know it's from behind, isn't it? It's tackled from behind.
You're going to box in, yeah, to me, that's a penalty. Yeah,
it's probably a bit. It's
a stupid thing to do regardless. Yeah. Like, it's not necessary at that point. Like, I mean, like, watch us. When was the last time we can remember, like, scoring from open play now? It's not dangerous. Like, just let him go through. He's gonna put it on the penalty spot. He's going to put it right in front of goal. And nobody's going to run onto it. But...
Yes. Right. Well,
my feeling is you like the comments from Morby there. It's probably, you know, if you think about managers or few things, managers over the years, when did he take the job? August last year?
About the end of August, start of September, yeah.
So we're at probably 18 months. I mean, managers don't tend to last more than 18 months, 2 years, do they? Let's be honest.
Especially not Sunderland.
No. And they wanted to replace him, obviously, in the summer, which they didn't do. They kind of revised that. They're not on their own different pages, whereas he's bit his lip before and now he isn't. It just kind of feels, you know, it's a bit, you know, when a manager starts saying, like, you know, you think about Poirier back in the day making his comments about what the fans like up here, like, or like, you know, going 4-4-2 and running down, getting them down the wings and Quinn and Phillips and all that. And as soon as something like that happens, it's like you're on a hide into nothing now. It's the beginning of the end, really. The only thing that's going to rescue him is results. With the next two games, I think West Brom probably the form team in the league.
I'm not even sure. I think even if he like went on like and won the next three, let's take that game out of it. If he went on and won like the next three league games and then lost one, I think they'd get rid of him. I think it's like the beginning of the end now.
Yeah, I think probably is, which
is a shame.
Forget though,
09. Oh. 09 has said we're going on an unbeaten run now.
Oh, right,
he's had a word with the lads. They've sorted we're going on an unbeaten run. So it's all going to be okay.
He should get help by marking.
Yeah.
That would be a start.
Let's take a break. We'll do a quick 10 minutes on that cup drop.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Wise Men's Tale podcast, right? And we're going to obviously preview this game when it comes around, unless we just decide to ignore it completely. But we spoke at the top of the pod there about how we found out about the draw, Sunderland a draw, Newcastle in the FA Cup. I don't even know where to start with it, to be honest. In what I'll say, in my lifetime, there has never been a bigger imbalance between where the two teams are in terms of ability, is the first thing to acknowledge, which is quite daunting in itself, because that's on top of the usual anxiety you get around these games when we're like quite evenly matched and both mid-table Premier League teams, or going back further than that when I was a kid, both even both mid-table tier two teams. And that's the first thing to be worried about, isn't it? I think it's good that we're at home, isn't it? Because I think sitting watching them spank Man U and spank Chelsea, and as I have been this season, like, ignorance will be bliss, I think, on this, is my concern. What are people thinking? Yeah. I'll go on my concern even more, because... Yeah,
loads of thoughts. I was kind of thinking I would have rather it was away from home. So I don't want to see it. Well, we're going to lose anyway. Like, I know people giving up. But the chances of us winning this game are slim to zero, and it would be against most teams in the top five or six of the Premier League. The fact of the matter is, there's going to be. I was thinking about, you know, the last time. There's going to be some people who'll never have probably been to a derby. Just kind of thinking about this. When was the last one? 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, it was 2016.
2016. Yeah, season we got relegated.
So 7 years. So say you start going when you're 10. So you're 11, 12. So you might start going then. You probably didn't see the one in 2016-17, so you're going to be
the season before that, because they weren't in the Premier League that season, got relegated.
So it's going to be, it's been a while, 7-8 years, so you're probably going to have a generation of people there who have never seen us play Newcastle before, which would be interesting. I mean, we haven't beaten us since 2011. the 1-0 where we lost the opening game of the season, under Steve Bruce. That's the last time we lost, which is mad, really, isn't it, when you think about it? But the likelihood is we're going to lose, and it's, you know, the worst possible, because of that disparity and because of the crest of the wave that they're riding, and because of our situation, it could really be not a wake-up call, but, like, it's all very well saying, oh, it's great, this. We're developing all these young players, and we're like scouting this and them, and then you come and get humped by the people who, you know, wrote some state-owned, you know, who could basically open the door to potentially in the next 5 years winning trophies. And we are standing, you know, a division below, saying, well, at least we managed to get 15 million for somebody who was signed for £1 million. Well done, us.
The worst situation is, isn't it, that they beat us and then they go on to win the F. That's to win the cup. That we're the beginning of their FA. That's the absolute worst thing that can happen. And I think that when you start to accept that, that could. I think everything else seems not as bad. And I don't get me wrong. I think my hands only stopped shaking from it about 2 hours ago. I think I'm still very much like. I still, every single time I think about it, or every single time I kind of, it even crosses my mind, I'm very much still shaking. I still feel sick. It's still absolutely awful. The last thing I said before I went to sleep last night was, oh my God, we've drawn the mags in the cup. Like, it is terrible. But there's a lot of things that could happen. It's the FA Cup. It's the magic of the FA Cup. And I'm only doing this because I want
to
be...
They lost to Sheffield United last season in the Cup.
They lost to Cambridge.
They have a third round curse. And obviously we're very good at breaking people's curses. So that's right. But it's...
We will get up for it more near the time. People are going to be thinking, like, oh God, you know, and we will get up for it. Of course we will. It's a derby match.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this will be... this would, what would I say? And again, you know, we could do something. You never know. But like, a defeat would be weird because it's never, we've never lost to a side, a Newcastle side, so much better than us before. That's the thing. Like, where now it's just, we're, they don't even play the same sport as us, I feel like, at times. That is how far the two sides are apart. And that's never, ever been a factor. You're always so gutted because you think, even if one is slightly better than the other, they're somewhere to being evenly matched. Like,
fair play to them as well. You know, because
the closest to that is when Keegan took them up from what is now the Championship, and we were struggling against relegation in the same division. That's been the furthest away in my lifetime, and we were still in the same league.
They've done it by being sustainable as well. To be fair to them, so.
Well, it's
well
it.
Done to them. They only spent 130 million quid on the strikers that played the weekend.
It will be weird because, like I say, we've never lost a game like that where you just think, well, we had no chance of winning. It's never been a thing. All evenly matched. So you're so gutted when you lose these games because you think, oh, why didn't we win? Why couldn't have we won? You know, we should have. And we're just not going to get. You're just not going to get that with this. I mean,
yeah.
Again,
stylistically
as well. I'm sorry, but. Like I said, ignorance will be bliss, and I wish I just didn't sit and watch them every week because the way they play, it's the last sort of team you want to play against who would be good at that in our league. Never mind, possibly the best team in the country at the minute who play like that because they're just the happier times just to let the team have the ball in the middle and then the hunt in packs and turn over possession really quickly and get on the counter attack really, really quickly and catch teams out. And it's just,
which is what we don't need.
Oh yeah, it's just, stylistically, it's a freaking. I'm so. Oh right, come on.
I do feel.
We can come back and do all this in a couple of weeks.
I do feel partly responsible for this, and there are people who can back me up on this because I did tell them when this happened. Like last Monday, I had a dream. I genuinely had a dream where I was in that, you know, that scene from Green Street where they're all like sat around their radios waiting to hear who they've drawn in the cup. I had a dream that I was in that scene and we got the mags in the cup. And I told people about this at the time. There've been people who've come up to me today and been like, what on earth? Where did this come from? But I did. So I would like to apologize that I have accidentally manifested this, but do you know what? Like it's, because obviously we put that question out on our Instagram, didn't we? How are people feeling? And people are very kind of, we're very 50-50 on it. There's a lot of people who have said, absolutely horrific, worst draw possible, kind of. But then, like, you've got, like, Matthew Laidlaw has gone, it will be very, very funny when we knock them out. And to be fair, there's one as well, Jason Nunn, I think it is, has gone with, we have nothing to lose on paper. They should win, so go out there and give them hell. And that's kind of that's the attitude we have to take, really, isn't it? There's we will talk about it more at the time, but it's just got to go for it. Anything can happen. It's the magic of the FA
Cup. Wigan beat Man City a couple of years ago. Newcastle lost to Sheffield United. It can't. And near the time we are, you know, we don't just sound like we're defeated from the start, but we're just being realistic with the derbies.
We're going to have a month of this. We're going to have a month of this. You know,
it's more than a month away. It's only the fourth today.
It's going to be stuff about tickets and segregation and kickoff times, and it's going to basically just punctuate the next month and Christmas. It's not going to go away. It's just going to be there. There'll be talk about banners, talk about this, that, and the other, won't there? You know, there's going to be. So, you know, I mean,
and it's going to be on telly for the world to see.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think they've just got to. They'll have to just go and, you know, like that was said before. They'll always, you know, have a go. So, and that's what they'll do.
They're gonna have to change the way they play, which we'll get on near the time.
I just think, you know, it's, you know, I've never seen, like, it's Newcastle. I've never seen like a team run probably like that since probably Russia at the World Cup when they got the semi final. And we all know how they managed to do that, don't we?
Well,
maybe someone should do an investigative piece on it instead of following the team around the country and like clapping like circus seals and, you know, booping and hollering about how great given everything is. Maybe have
the honours cuddles at the end of the match,
yeah,
right?
Actually, I've got. What would you do about the tickets? Because the start.
Give them as few as you're allowed to.
I'd give them absolutely nothing.
Yes.
Not anymore.
96, 97.
Like, well, no, situation. I mean, like, if things were different a few years ago.
I thought you meant give them 96 tickets. What's that, yeah, that'd be?
Oh, the 96, 97 scenario where away fans were banned from this fixture.
I mean,
completely banned.
We did the whole campaign a few years ago around trying to get people to the derby and everything like that. I think that's changed now for me, to be honest. I don't really recognise them as a football team anymore, you know, so... You know, all the principles and everything that was supposed to be held at the time have just dissipated anyway. So, and you can't bleat on about human rights really and your desire to go to a football match given their background, can you really? So, yeah, you're not going to get thrown. Yeah,
I'm not sure what your opinion is, like opinion of them is. I haven't really got which side you come down on.
You say that, but for balance, they don't give people 0-hour contracts in sport shops.
They don't. They just throw people off buildings. But anyway.
So, we've got more of that to worry about. I'm going to have to go because my cat's just brought in a dead animal of some sort. It's not a magpie, unfortunately. So I need to go and retrieve that situation now. We will be back later in the week. Matt will be here to look ahead to the weekend's game against West Brom, isn't it? Yeah. And that's good, isn't it? Okay, as always, thanks for listening.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.